Hi, welcome to the podcast today. When we get our guest, something we have never discussed on this show before. You may have seen the story a couple of weeks ago or a picture of a bunch of people got together for a gathering, press conference, and you're like, that's funny that all of these people across the angry, vitriolic political spectrum that we reside in now are together in this one spot. And when you hear my guest, who is back for a second time, because he goes from Acoustics for Autism and another successful Sunday with that to his day job. So we'll talk electric vehicles and is it too soon? Not part of that discussion. You know, I'm a bit of a car person in the sense that my brother steers me in the right direction. My lease is running out on my Murano, which has been fine. But as my brother told me, because the model, the make is very old. He's like, yeah, your user interface in the car, the dash screen is prehistoric. By all means, I should have a 2006 Accord because I drive to and from work and not many other places, and I'm wasting my money with my down payment and whatever lease or payment I have. I guess I like comfort on my 4-mile ride. So I think this is going to be a really interesting discussion. I was fortunate enough to stumble on an article last night that I may or may not have put out on Twitter, which is up as opposed to Facebook and the other places, where I got educated real quickly about EV mandates, tiny electric Chinese cars, why they might not be so bad, and how a certain person might use this to win the election. It might be balling up all these bullets in their pocket to fire them as we get closer to November. First up, they weren't bullets, but tears. I'm not one for emotion and what's the romanticism of sports in a lot of ways, maybe like looking back, but in the moment, not necessarily. And there's a word I'm looking for that escapes me at the second. But watching people talk about the retirement of Travis Kelce's brother, Jason Kelce, was quite a watch yesterday. And there's a lot to be learned. My good old friend, Eagle Jeff, kind of nailed it. Jason had announced earlier in the morning he was going to hold a 1 o'clock press conference to discuss his future. I didn't know which way he was going to go. And to be quite honest, Jeff, correct me, help me here. I don't know why he is retiring. I don't know if he said. He spent so much time spitting wisdom in other directions, I missed why he's stepping back. He certainly could continue to play. Maybe he fell in love with the lifestyle that he was living after the season, partying, following his brother around, all that stuff, and just being a normal dude, as if he wasn't normal enough already. And that normalcy connected him to every Philadelphia fan. And I will dodge all the sports stuff in this. But it was a stirring about 40-minute talk, and my friend Jeff called it around like 11:45 or so, or maybe noon. There was a picture posted of the press conference area, and there's a bunch of reserved chairs for Jason's family, for Donna and Ed and Travis, who looked like he was dressed to be in a Color Me Bad band performing at the casino. I'm not knocking him. 90s style and baggy things are all back. But Jeff's like, yeah, he's gone. All these seats and family members reserved and whatnot, that's not here, so he can say he's coming back, because that just takes an I'm coming back. It was a moving, stirring speech with a lot of grace and wisdom and humility and honesty. And I'll simply say this, if I were an agent or any kind of a team management executive, I would play parts of Jason Kelce's speech to said want to be professional or any kind of athletes and go, this is how you avoid becoming sports talk radio fodder. You don't have to be a golden child. You're going to have mistakes, but here is how you recover from some of those things. Not your best season. Here's how you recover and get yourself back into the good graces of very diehard sports fan bases. So again, lots of wisdom in there. I wanted to play this part. It ties back to what Alex and I talked about last week when that girl was like, if you can't date and if you can't be committed to someone, you take that to your therapist, which again, we will recount as total bullshit. I'm just about officially retired from dating. It's dogs. And I'm going to spend all the quality time, not that I wasn't before, all the quality time I can with them as we're getting older. And when something looks wrong, I'm like, this is the end. So my inflection point for furthering social relationships will be when one or both of them are gone, and then I'll just get another dog. But even the most willingly single of us, me, would love someone like this.
I won't forget the Eagles Christmas party in 2014 and heading out afterwards with a bunch of my teammates to Buffalo Billiards, where my life would change forever. That night, I'd meet my future wife. I still remember the moment she walked through the door. The first instance is burned in my retina. It was like she glided through the opening, an aura around her. Then she started talking. And I thought, man, is this what love feels like? She was beautiful and smart, serious yet playful. I knew it right away. I think it's no coincidence I have enjoyed my best years of my career with Kylie by my side. Every accolade I have ever received has come with her in my life. She has brought the best out of me through love, devotion, support, honesty, intelligence, and of course, the swift kick in the ass from time to time.
If anybody doubted why the Kelces had been all over TV, and yes, it's so much to do with Taylor and Jason slamming beers shirtless at the games, but they are, as you've heard Alex talk about, wonderfully decent human beings. There's another really good part in the speech real close to that. He, as you've heard Alex talked about being from Cleveland and how athletes always leave Cleveland. He said, heck, even our team left. He said he was dedicated to staying in one place his entire career, and he will be recognized as a Philadelphian through and through for the rest of eternity. Lots of wisdom in there, just how to be a better adult and a better human. It was worth a listen, 40 minutes of it. Today, when I woke up and checked the Toledo Reddit page, which sometimes I don't have the patience for. Oh, by the way, I haven't had coffee the last 2 days. My dad keeps saying, maybe it's pizza, whiskey, and beer on the weekends, and it's helping your stomach. I also don't have coffee because I'm sleeping through them. So I said, no coffee yesterday. I felt good. No coffee today. A little hiccup, so to speak, but maybe the coffee was causing this the whole time. But the question, why? So I had my tea, and I'm reading the Toledo Reddit page, and it says, favorite media personalities. Oh, boy. Here we go. And I did see my name, and somebody said that they liked me, which was fine, and I didn't see anybody ripping me. Doing any person in any kind of public spotlight, politician, football player, someone in the media, they could come off as beloved. There will be several people, rationally or not, who hate them, who want to know why they walk the earth. Conversely, there are people, Kanye West, for example, who most of us go, you are a despicable individual. And there will be like three other people who are like, I love them so much. They do everything for me. So I braced myself for it. And it was a lot of the old guard. And I have two of them on my list, and I apologize if I'm forgetting anybody, but I wanted to share my list, and I should probably put it up there. Jaden, but he's like more my friend now than media person, and that is not to disparage what he loves doing. Most commonly referenced, I think, on that post, Jerry Anderson, Chris Peterson. Both of them did things for me and cared about me and my career here in ways that they did not have to and in ways that I did not expect them to. Jerry was helpful when my one job went away. I thought his reverence for me when we would talk on the old radio show was him just kind of playing it up and being a good dude. Oh no, it was genuine. Like, it was genuine off that. I had only met Chris Peterson like twice. And I think the second and a half time I had asked for her guidance, and she basically was like, she's like, I know who you are and what you do, and I want you to do X, Y, and Z. The next time, maybe we met early 2022, was it 2 years ago? I'd gotten to the point where I knew a lot of people that she seemed interested in meeting, and I knew I was on the right path, and I could see a bit of a gleam in her eye of pride. Tony Geftos, Chris Vickers, Ryan Weekman. They are very talented at what they do. Tony is maybe the best husband in the area. Chris Vickers is probably the nicest guy in the area. I don't know if there is a person in media that is more community-minded and dedicated to their cause as Ryan is, with his son Grant and these accessible playgrounds. Sean Hegarty, who is eyeball deep in some big stories lately, Tony Dia racket he's been running. Sean said I have to read the document. So I'm going to read the document. And lastly, and I apologize if I'm forgetting anybody, Kaylee Kirby, WTOL's new morning host. She did weekends and reporting before. And we have lost so many good reporters on our local news because they wanted to go on to bigger, better markets, get better paying jobs. It's not uncommon for them to leave here. And it was an exodus for a period of time. So I'm so happy that Kaylee decided that it was best for her to start waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning to do that show. She is bright, smart, kind, nice, talented, and she loves sports. That's another connection for us. Her dad and uncle are former professional football and baseball players. And I've also told her she's going to help me on the opening day broadcast at Pacos. So, electric vehicles, is it too much too soon? It would appear so. Let me welcome back Scott Hayes to the studio. Almost twice in 2 weeks. You are welcome to come by whenever you want.
I appreciate that, and I will take you up on it.
First things first, congratulations on, I'm assuming, a record-breaking Acoustics for Autism. You got numbers yet?
No, we don't. It takes a while to do the accounting, and so we have a crew that does that, and they're very tight-lipped about it. I can't even get pillow talk out of Nicole with numbers yet, because she likes to be accurate. And if I start throwing things out there, which I've done in the past, before we had all the accounting done, that we don't want that out there until we know for sure how we did. I can tell you that there's no way we didn't improve on what we earned for the scholarship fund from last year. It's just impossible. There were just so many thousands of people there. I have every confidence that we'll have broken a record.
All those tents to keep people dry and warm, totally not necessary.
No.
Who would have guessed?
Right. How about that day?
Let's swing things over to congratulations. I saw your face a couple days prior to your first visit here, and this was an across the political spectrum gathering. What is your position over at the refinery that so many of us drive past? We see it all the time. What the heck is the name of it? What is your role there?
So I work for a company, the parent company that owns the old, most people know it as the old Sun Oil, Sunoco, refinery on Woodville. It's the one closer to the city center. There's two in Toledo area. Ours kind of straddles both Toledo and Oregon, the far west part of Oregon. The other one's a little further out. That used to be BP, that's now been bought by a Canadian company called Cenovus. Ours is PBF Energy. We call the facility the Toledo Refining Company. It was set, it was on the list of assets to be retired, to be shut down by Sunoco. And our company found some value there and thought that if they put some investment into the facility, they could make it a profitable unit, and they've done that. So I'm very thankful to them for saving that facility because it's a huge job producer, a huge boon to economic development. I would argue it's very necessary for the coming years as we transition.
And you're one of the managers there, correct?
I am. I work for the corporate office, so I am director of strategic communications.
Got him. The short version of this podcast, this recording, this visit is all of us, everybody probably moved too fast for electric vehicles. That gathering a couple weeks ago, again, across the political spectrum, from Mayor Wade to the Lieutenant Governor, many others wanted to push back on the regulations that are coming. Well, now, like almost no more than like a half decade away that have been pushed by the federal government to get, I believe, half the vehicles in the country that are sold in 2030 to be electric vehicles. This group came together to say, hold on a second, not real wise. And we're going to lose a lot of jobs here locally.
Yeah. So and you saw the headlines today, Stellantis, again, in the Blade at least, drawing the correlation between jobs at our number one job-producing facility in the area, our beloved Jeep plant, to, the California mandate. So there's government regulations. There's two of them. I won't go into details of them other than they're both in various stages of rulemaking that mandate electric vehicles. And so they mandate them, we are arguing, on a schedule that is unachievable. And when that happens, there are collateral consequences. So the objective of that day was to bring together stakeholders from a wide range of backgrounds and competencies to talk about those collateral consequences that we believe will disproportionately harm the Midwest. And so I think we did a good job of telling that. Some of the things to be concerned about is, do we have the capacity of the electric grid to handle all of the charging that will go on? California's seen, they've had rolling blackouts in the past. Blamed that on the extra charging because it does add a significant load to the grid. So we have to augment the grid. There's that.
Come back to me.
No, check.
Yeah, we're good. Sorry about that. Upgrades to the grid.
Yeah, updates. We've got to augment the grid capacity. So that means the infrastructure that delivers the electrons that turn into our lights and charging stations and everything that we use electricity for, that there is concern that the added load from everybody charging electric vehicles at night or during the day will have, and it will exceed the capacity of the grid's ability to handle it. I went to a presentation by PJM recently where they talked about, even without considering the additional load that EVs would add, that the grid needs to be augmented anyway, that we just need to do maintenance. There's a lot of electric, there's a lot of metal parts involved in, and I'm not an electrician by any stretch. That's one area I always stay away from. It scares me, first of all, and I just don't understand it. But we know that the grid, as in its current state, probably needs to be augmented, and then if you add all the charging, that's just one of many things that we highlighted that day.
I stumbled across an article that just popped out yesterday, and now I'm more educated on BDYs from China than I ever expected to be. And from what I can gather, all of what's happening is China's fault. And it seems like the mandates that were coming soon are going to get bumped back because of China, because we want to build our own stuff here instead of having their little tiny cars, which are starting to proliferate the world. Rather than having them here, we want to make our own stuff.
Yeah.
Did the push for EVs start because of China in the sense that we wanted to beat them to market with electric vehicles?
That's a good argument, and that's one that I think is, I believe there's some of that, but the real push came because we're concerned about climate change. So that's what drove it. But what the Chinese did that was smart was they forecasted this day would come before we did. And they went around the world and made strategic alliances with countries that both are going to have a huge population boom and a huge increase in their middle class, and are going to need energy in all forms, whether it be power plants, traditional, otherwise, but are also going to be major markets where they can sell their vehicles to. But the thing they did that we didn't do, they beat us to the punch, was they bought up all the critical minerals that you need for the batteries. They did that decades ago. So we don't have access to 73.5%, I've seen 76% of all the available lithium and cobalt that is in the world. Both of them, with the technology as we know it today, are necessary for battery electric vehicles. You can't charge them without those minerals. They own it all, so the supply chain goes through them. They've also accelerated their production of electric vehicles and are able to make them cheaper. So the concern is, are they getting the stuff like you articulated? Are they getting the stuff to market before us? And are we going to be playing catch up? I believe in an all of the above strategy. They're letting the market decide. They're not mandating anything. I believe that we should let the market decide. I think we were slow to act and to shore up the minerals, because I don't know how we come back from that. It's so hard to permit mining in this country that I don't see that easing up in a few years, that will need to be competitive. But yes, that is a big concern. But China, they're not mandating electric vehicles. That's just one of many options, and they're making them more affordable, so they're more attractive.
Yeah.
And the other thing they are doing is they are throwing an all of the above energy strategy. So there's no country that makes more electric vehicles than China, but there's also no country that makes more gas powered cars than China. There's no country that makes more solar panels, but there's no country that's building coal fired electricity generating plants at a faster clip than China. So they're doing all of the above, which I'm advocating we need to do in this country too to be competitive.
One of the things that you talked about the climate change, and not to get deeply scientific, not to refute or support or anything, you really just have to watch weather forecasts these days, and you can say things are different than they used to be. And in a lot of places, the weather is quite extreme. I think when the push for these mandates happened, the climate change discussion had been 15, 20 years old, but it seems to have made it into the average person's mindset over the last couple of years, because maybe severe weather has come to deeply affect them. And now this, as the pullback should really happen, because as you've illustrated, we're just not ready for this across the board in so many ways. And we got to kick this can down the road. And I know you have a suggestion for that, but it seems like we need it to be where the mandates want us now. For instance, there are some places, there's some parts of the country, and granted they're coastal, you can't get insurance anymore. You're not going to get your home insured. Your car might not get insured. I know there's TikTok things about Hyundais, not climate connected, but climate is affecting people's ability to, well, their bottom line. We all know that things are getting more and more expensive. And if you can't get what you have insured and it's very expensive, you've got a serious, serious problem where maybe you have to pick up and move or consider a completely different lifestyle. And I don't think it's hard to say this is all because of climate change, unless it's just a once in a quarter of a million year severe weather cycle that many of us are enduring now. And it would be a great time to start working on that with these EVs, but we're not there yet.
We're not there yet. And, you know, there's so much to pour through. I've landed on the side that I believe from what I've been able to read, that because you'll have people say, you know, we're still coming out of an ice age technically. So the planet, you go back far enough, the planet has went through these significant cycles. But I do believe that greenhouse gases and CO2, I believe in the theory that it would naturally trap otherwise exiting heat. And so I believe that there's something to it. What we haven't had was anyone be accurate at the rate of what, how quickly it's changing and what the exact effects are. It's so complex.
Yeah.
So complicated. It's very complex. But what I believe should happen is let the engineers continue. If you look at emissions from auto vehicles over the years, they've gone down. It's like a straight line down. I think we should continue to let the engineers do their job and continue to get more roads, more miles per gallon on the road. There's been, even with emissions going down in the country across the board, we've had more efficiency, more, you know, gas mileage has gone way up. There's another statistic that I'm failing to bring to mind that suggests the same thing, that if you let the smart people do the work, we're going to naturally get there. I think you should allow electric vehicles to penetrate the market and let businesses do what businesses do and figure out ways to make it more make it more competitive and more sellable to folks and bring the price down. I think if you get the price for electric vehicles down to a reasonable level, I think it'll be attractive for some people to buy electric vehicles.
And that was that's the China fear, why we are aggressively trying to keep their product out of the country and even out of parts of Mexico and Canada so they don't wind up here, because they are like a quarter of the price. Now, they're also very small and not what Americans like to drive, but I know that's a fear. You have a good suggestion, which people are probably a little bit familiar with. Can you explain what it is and why you think it's a good idea to go with a hybrid?
Yes. And thank you for bringing me back on track. Yes, I do have a suggestion. I think the sensible way to transition would be to do it with a traditional hybrid. If you look at, if we're just talking carbon, because it takes so much energy to get the cobalt and the lithium out of the ground, separated, processed, refined, there's so much energy that goes into this. And there's been studies that a battery electric vehicle, so this is one that doesn't have an internal combustion engine, not a hybrid, but you plug it in and it's all battery all the time. The batteries are so big and there's so many minerals involved that for every one of those, you could make six plug-in hybrids. So they have a smaller internal combustion engine, bigger battery, but not as big as the battery electric vehicle. And for everyone, you could make six plug-in hybrids and 90 hybrids with the same effect on carbon that ends up in the atmosphere.
It's like training wheels for electric vehicles.
Yeah.
And we as Americans, as we found out very well 4 years ago, most don't like being forced or told to do things. And that's kind of what the mandate was. And the hybrid seems like the training wheels or the half measure or the baby steps to getting to a place where it seems like we will ultimately end up, whether that's 2030, 2050, I don't know. But we're always trying to improve as human beings what we do, our technology and how we take care of the earth. And it seems like that's the long game. Will the mandates get pulled back? And it seems like it could even be, not to get super political here, but what did I read? So that 1% of the American workforce works in auto or on auto manufacturing, but an enormous amount of that 1% is within like 90 miles of where we're sitting right here. One, not so much. We'll see. One, extremely competitive political state. And I am wondering if the president will wield that at some point to get more auto workers on his side as we get closer to the election. Because as you've already illustrated, knowing what you know, the electric vehicles is a bad idea across the board. If I could throw one more thing, my brother said today, he's the car wonk. He said, you know, somebody got an electric vehicle, loves the car, but had an accident and had to get the battery replaced. How much is a replacement battery?
$15,000 to $20,000.
Yeah. So we're not ready for that either. It's not like you ding a fender. So it seems like that could be in play as well. It's and why this is particularly important for where we live.
Well, I can tell you the president did hear our message. We heard it from this thing we did in Toledo over a week ago has generated a lot of conversation in political offices. I won't tell you exactly who, because I heard directly from their state directors that it's been elevated and there are significant concerns about it. Now, the president came out and intimated that they're going to roll back the mandate, but it still lands in the same place. So they're going to pull back the pace, how quickly, and backload it. So we've got a couple of grace years where instead of it, all new vehicles have to be at 30%, they might be at 20%. I haven't seen it, and it's not finalized yet, but I think that there's going to be movement. And yes, I do wonder, is it because it's a political year? But I'm going to be watching, are they going to move that second part of it where 67% of all vehicles have to be by 2032 or 2035 have to be battery electric vehicles. My hope is that we'll see something along the lines of that they'll include hybrids in that mix somehow. And again, that cures it for the consumer, yeah, in my mind, because the number one thing we're hearing from consumers is they don't perform well in cold weather, and they have range anxiety, and they're prohibitively expensive. So the number one thing that's driving the expense of electric vehicles are those minerals, those precious minerals that China owns. If we can get a smaller battery, and hybrids have a smaller battery, you get the best of both worlds. Reduced emissions, smaller engine. The engine constantly charges the battery. The batteries aren't as big, so the price comes down. And then you can go to Hilton Head on vacation and not spend 6 hours charging on the way there. So it checks a lot of the boxes. And I would think that would be a sensible approach moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Last question, and if there's anything else you want to cover, please, by all means. With the push to cleaner cars, and as we've talked about getting people into these vehicles, this wasn't necessarily a mandate, but it was a carrot. It was an incentive. Can you maybe compare and contrast a little bit to me what I found to be almost too successful, because car dealers ran out of cars to sell? Can you compare and contrast this to cash for clunkers around 2008, 2009?
I can't, because I'm just not that familiar with it, other than I can guess, right? So was it a federal program
it was part of the recovery, and I might get a little bit of this.
So 2008 post, when the economy went to hell, yeah, and we were dealing with the recession, and
yeah, one of the ways to stimulate the economy, I think in some ways, and kill two birds with one stone, was get people out of those gas-guzzling 1983 Buicks.
Yep.
And there was all kind of rebates for them. Like, you turn that in, you're never going to get more money, and we get you into a new, cleaner car. And where I got to experience back home, a little bit north of Philadelphia in Allentown, was very car-centric, surprisingly, here. As far as, like, lots of, like, we have a Yark here. There was big dealerships there, and they ran out of cars because this program was so darn successful. Gotcha. So much so that, like, these places couldn't do advertising anymore. Like, they didn't want people coming to buy cars. But it did remind me a little bit of at least wanting to get people into a cleaner vehicle for the environment. So,
well, I think the difference, and again, not knowing it now that you mention it, I do remember it now. The difference is, I think you had consumers that were incentivized because they wanted the product. They wanted it happened to be cleaner, because, like I said, that time over intensity graph, it shows you that we've lowered emissions over time. But people generally would rather drive a newer vehicle. There's right. some exceptions, right? Enthusiasts and so forth. But most people would rather drive a newer vehicle, and it happened that they happened to be cleaner. But the dealers loved it, right? They were getting people yep. in to the point where they couldn't handle the rush. What we're hearing from the dealers is they can't come. We invited the dealers to come to our rally, and they can't. They'll tell you off the record, but they can't tell you that they hate these electric vehicles
right.
because they've got to get them off their lots. They're sitting there, and the average time is like 140 some days, and a comparable combustion engine car is 49 days, I think, the average time online. I just saw this the other day. So I think, again, however this works, you've got to include what the consumer wants in it. Now, I agree. If there is a greater objective, that if this does, in fact, make the climate better, the planet cleaner, then I think that incentives, you can at least talk about it. But I believe the consumer has to be driven. They have to like the product, and it can't be prohibitively expensive. One of the things we highlighted in our rally was that the disproportional effect to poor people, because if we mandate all new cars, if we were to opt into the California mandate, it's 100%, not 67 by 2032 of all new car sales have to be electric, or 2035 rather. Going to wreck the secondary market. So the used car market, where people that are on a precarious income or a fixed income rely on the used car market, everyone's going to be competing for those last internal combustion engine cars, because that's what the consumer wants.
It would be like the last 3 years on rocket fuel, no pun intended. And not to, like, the cost to get into the regular EVs as is. As we discuss this, I wonder if we will reflect back one day and we'll go, this is one of like the big industrial misses of America. Maybe we chased the Tesla a little bit too hard. Yeah. And wanted to design cars like that. Like, I got hot a little bit for Rivian, which we made all these really high scale, highbrow pickup trucks and all these other like wannabe Tesla types, when maybe people just wanted like an $18,000 vehicle or like a $28,000 small Mazda type vehicle, because that's what most people drive. And instead we chased our tails with the wrong market. Yeah. And then people decided, not interested.
That's a great point.
And now we have these, I know.
There's too many that are luxury of the electric vehicles. We should have came out, they should have tested the market with some more affordable ones that are more practical. But I don't want to miss this point too. So I believe that it is another reason. We talked about the energy it takes to get the minerals out of the ground and why that is worrisome for the environment. But the other issue that I believe causes a significant, I believe it's a net loser for the environment, is that pursuing policies that inevitably will shut down the refining business here in this country is just shifting it to countries that make it less cleanly than we do. So in the United States, I'm very familiar with what it takes to run a facility like ours, and how closely we work with the EPA, and how closely together we achieve not only making the fuel cleaner, but making the process cleaner. We spend a lot of time, energy, and money to do so. And when they're building these facilities, we haven't built a refinery since 1977 in this country. Meanwhile, they're building them in India, China, Africa, mostly by Chinese companies that do not put install them with the rudimentary pollution control technology that we do in this country. Why? Because it's a major capital investment, number one. And two, it's a drag on the process. So you can't run your throughput as high, so your efficiency goes down, because it takes you have to It slows the process down, and it is more expensive to do so. So I would argue that we can't get around the trends that are inevitable for population in the developing world. There is a part of the world that is abjectly poor and wants what we have. The only way to get it is through scalable, affordable, clean energy. That's going to involve all of the above, including fossil fuels. As I pointed out, they're building them as we speak. We should be building the infrastructure here to do it, and then sending our cleaner products overseas to feed that inevitable rush that's going to come from population trends.
In a geopolitical kind of discussion, and you don't have to pontificate on this, it's like a cyclical type thing, and I don't know how much we can combat that. Maybe we're doing a good job. We are an old country. And what you just talked about, to get our clean energy to these places, where Africa will be the greatest continent on earth by the end of this, by the end of this century, with the way it's growing and its size and its geography. And we will be a decrepit old man, hopefully, or old person. And I wonder how much is just cyclical, because we would love to get that stuff over there. But we've got so many things that we've got to take care of here in a country that is like 150 to 70 years old as far as like industry is concerned. And we are often having on our backs the rest of the planet. And that allows a maybe less scrupulous country to swoop in and do what you said, get things done a little bit faster, but not necessarily as safely, and maybe prey on some of those places and create those partnerships that will last decades into the future while we're just trying to be the good guy.
Yeah, we should have partnered with them, because I think they would rather work. We've been told, I was able to sit on a panel with one of our representatives from Michigan that's concerned about the issue. And there were some African energy ministers, and they said, we would absolutely rather work with American countries, but you signed an agreement with a treaty with some European nations that you would, your companies, so the Siemens, the Bechtels of the world that traditionally build big infrastructure and big power plants and refineries, they're not building it in the developing world if it's fossil fuel related. So the Chinese swooped in and are doing it. And I think the planet is worse off because of it.
It's scary when we see, there was 100 inches of snow in the Sierra Nevada. And all these weather events that get extreme pretty quickly. It's kind of like, we had a mild winter. But if you look across just our country, things have been unpredictable. Like, we had a tornado swoop down in the middle of what was supposed to be just be a stormy afternoon, swooped in, rolled through Point Place, and then went on its way. Yeah. You know, kind of scary stuff. And I don't think in our lives, I don't remember anything like that. Do you?
I remember extremes here and there, but I don't know. I don't know if we're... They're better communicated now. They're happening more frequently now, or what? I mean, we're a more connected world now. I wonder if we're hearing about it more, but it feels that way.
That's usually my go-to. What I always try to remind people, far be it for me to be the optimist, but I try to remind people, the world really isn't that much worse off or better than ever before. There's just more voices telling you that. But just like growing up in different places and seeing the weather changes that we have and some of the other scientific things that we have, like erosion. And I tell friends in Miami, I was like, I'll come visit you when you're underwater. You'll be the new Atlantis. last question. Where does this go next? What can people look for next? A massaging of those mandates or something else?
Yeah, what we're asking people to do is to reach out to their congressperson, both in the Senate and in the House, and just say, hey, there's more to this story. We want to have a say in it that if we're going to incentivize electric vehicles, it has to be done in a way that doesn't actually make the environment and the climate worse, doesn't disproportionately harm poor people, doesn't put us at a national security risk, and doesn't jeopardize the products that we still do make here. Because remember, we make jet fuel, gasoline, diesel at our facility, but we also make the building block chemicals that go to everything from your medicine to makeup to your iPhone. All of that is derived. This foam, I mean, pretty much anything I can touch in your studio, a laminate, the interior of an electric vehicle, that's a derivative of the greatest element ever, carbon. And we depend on it. It's Ohio's third largest industry, the petrochemical industry, that make all these great products. They turn over the chemistry a couple times, and next thing you know, you've got plastic pellets that go into an extruder, and then you're making a medical device. So we've got to understand that, and understand that we need to protect those supply chains and jobs. And I believe we can chew gum and walk at the same time. I believe we can continue to improve emissions without jeopardizing the country.
Chew gum, walk, bow to dish on our nose, stand on one leg, hold our arms out, and all kinds of other things.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, well, I think you can do. I think you can achieve objectives when the right people get in the room and are open minded. And one of the things that I was very proud of, two examples, is this bipartisan rally that we had to expose the issue that there might be more to the story that we need to consider. It wasn't any finger pointing. It wasn't political. It was people that are that consider themselves stakeholders or representing different constituents that we need to take a second look at this and then look at what we did on Sunday. You know, for one day of the year, at least, you had people from every background, every location in this area come together and celebrate the universal language of love, and that's music. And there weren't fights, there weren't people yelling at each other. It was a group of people that care about making their community better, and I believe in the better side of us, and I believe that's there. And I believe that as we evolve, we're going to get away from all this finger pointing and all this vitriol and all this tribalism.
Thanks for sussing all this out in a way that so many of us can understand. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, Eric.